On the new Classical FM, that was John Rutter's take on the music of the Fab Four, the Beatles Concerto, second movement featuring pianists Peter Rostel and Paul Schaefer with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. You're listening to Sunday Night at the TSO. I'm Kathleen Kajioka. When it comes to the Beatles, I can't think of another pop act that has been so widely covered by classical artists. And it's not simply a case of the classical world hopping onto a popular bandwagon, so to speak. There is a richness in the quality of their music that has been perennially engaging to musicians of all stripes. And you will be able to hear that for yourself, writ large, at the TSO, March 4th and 5th. Revolution, the music of the Beatles, a symphonic experience, will take over Roy Thomson Hall. Grammy Award-winning conductor and creator Jeff Tysick brings his new arrangements, along with rare and unseen photos. It will be a Beatles experience like no other. And here to tell us all about it is Jeff Tysick himself. Maestro Tysick, welcome to Sunday Night at the TSO.
Hey, it's great to be with you. I'm looking forward to speaking with you about this incredible music, and also I'm so thrilled to be coming back and working with such an amazing orchestra that I've had the great privilege of working with for many, many years.
Well, I'm thrilled that you've been able to make it onto the show tonight, and so excited to talk to you about the Beatles. First, some get-to-know-you questions. Though you are familiar with the TSO, our listeners may not know you so well. So are you ready?
Sure.
What's your favorite venue in the world that you've performed at?
Well, there's different venues for different reasons. There's, of course, the quality of sound. And of all places in Canada, I have to say Edmonton, the hall, this little hall, it's a 1,700-seat hall. And it was designed by the same people who designed the hall in the Dallas Symphony that I work with, the Dallas Symphony in that hall, Meyerson down there as well. And it's just amazing acoustic venue. It's great. And I also like that the audience is right next to the side of the stage as it curves around. So when I walk off, I can just speak with the people sitting there a little bit. It's kind of fun. And then for scenic, I think performing at Red Rocks in Colorado, this outdoor amphitheater built into the side of a Red Rock mountain. And I worked there with Chuck Mangione, and we did a 6 a.m. concert, which was a sunrise concert, and there were 10,000 people there. And then in the afternoon, starting at 6 p.m., we did a sunset concert with another 10,000 people. And it was just a gorgeous place to be. So those two come to mind.
Sounds absolutely magical. A nice shout out to Edmonton. What's your dream vacation destination?
Italy. Oh. I love Italy. I'm half Italian. I've been there twice only. I wish I could go more, but I've been there twice. And I just love the country. I love the people. Of course, the food is just unbelievable. And it was nice to, go around a corner in Rome, and all of a sudden I'm standing in front of the ruins of the Forum and all those, and the Colosseum and all that. And it was really striking to see all of that. So, and I remember going to the Accademia in Florence and looking at the ancient musical instruments, and there was a tenor viola sitting there, and it was 450 years old.
Wow.
It was incredibly beautiful, and it had never been played. It was
wow.
Just hanging there, you know.
Wow.
But, so I think Italy is my favorite destination, or my dream destination.
What's your favorite area in Toronto?
Well, I will have to tell you, the first time I came to Toronto was on my honeymoon.
No way.
I was a senior at the Eastman School of Music. It was 1972, September. September 2nd, 1972, I came to Toronto on September 3rd with my new wife. And we stayed downtown, and then we kind of, for a couple of days, and then we went out where the Science Museum is way outside of town. I don't remember the exact area. And then for years, I came with Chuck Mangione and performed at Ontario Place and also in some of the concert halls. So I've been around Toronto quite a bit, and I've checked out all different neighborhoods, and I like the variety of what's in the city. I remember I was in the Chinatown area, and we wanted a place to have some really great dim sum. So I went up to a street vendor. I said, hey, this is what where should we eat? This is what we want to do. And he said, okay, go over to the next street, go in this building, go to the third floor. And we went up there and it was crazy. And by the time we finished, our table was littered with plates and we were all very happy. So I love, you know, the concert hall with the orchestra. I love going there and working with them and that whole area downtown. But I've been kind of all over Toronto in the last, believe it or not, 50 years. So I'm very fond of that city.
Oh, it's a long relationship. Well, let's talk about the Beatles. How did this Beatles Symphonic Project first come about?
Well, Jamie Tysik Greenberg, my manager, co-producer, and also my daughter, by the way, who also is an Eastman School graduate, and I were producing concerts, and we started a relationship with a company called Wise Music, a big publishing, worldwide publishing company, and they had a relationship with Apple Corps and Sony, and they had access to Beatles music. You know, I have quite a long history of creating Pops concerts, and they said, we can get the rights to do this, which is very important because you have to do everything legally. You just can't say, hey, I'm going to take all these songs and go do whatever I want with them. It does not work that way. You have to have legal permission and make agreements in order to do it. But they had access to the entire catalog. So we started brainstorming different ideas, and I know that they do have an album called Revolution, but the point is they were a revolution. I remember being in junior high school when the Beatles hit America and how incredibly different it was from everything else, and they sort of really changed the face of popular music in many, many ways. So we thought that would be a good concept, and we wanted to touch on a lot of different albums. And so we started to create a song list and put this concert together. Along the way, we found this photographer who had taken, I think, 750 black and white photos, these candid photos of them in the recording studio and in different parts of performing. And we made a deal to get the rights to project those in the concert as well. So we thought this would make a really nice package for orchestras. And then it was my job to figure out how to do these arrangements in a way that did not detract from the original intent of the music, but to symphonically enhance it. And as we know, George Martin, who's sometimes called the fifth Beatle, he was their producer. He did use woodwinds and he used strings. I mean, Eleanor Rigby is just a string quartet. And he used piccolo trumpet on Penny Lane. So, and he used the brass on different pieces. So there were a lot of orchestrational elements already present in the music. But in some cases, I went further than that. Still preserving the original intent of the music, but maybe making it a little bit more majestic. And one of those pieces would be like Hey Jude. I mean, hearing a full symphony orchestra behind the band rocking out on Hey Jude is pretty amazing, I have to say.
Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, I mean, the Beatles, it's such an incredible catalog. The individual songs themselves are so rich. I mean, what is it, or how would you describe what it is about the Beatles' music that lends itself so well to these different permutations, such as what you've just done?
Well, for one thing, the chord progressions are very kind of classical in a way. It's amazing how you could take these chord progressions and you could write Mozart over the top of them. So I think that itself lends an opportunity to think about orchestrating these in a way that could possibly work. And also the Beatles music, there's so much space in it. It's just not a wall of sound all the time. I mean, some pieces are like that, but a lot of them, Here Comes the Sun or Blackbird or Yesterday or Something or She's Leaving Home. There's all this space in the music and there are these wonderful elements that they play that could be accentuated by orchestral instruments. So there's a lot in the music. And the other thing is the incredible variety and diversity of the songs. Mm-hmm. You know it's the Beatles because the Beatles are singing it, okay? And you do know their guitar sound and, you know, Ringo on the drums. So you have some of that. But there's such variety in how they approach these songs. They're so interesting. And capturing that and accentuating that was the task for me, with, as I said, without ruining the original intent. So they're very subtle, but there's a lot there once you start to dig down.
Speaking of the variety, as you say, it's such a huge span and they went through so many changes. When you're shaping a concert, how do you do that in a way that makes it feel cohesive?
Well, you could go chronologically, and I think we did pay some attention to that. But whenever you're programming a live concert, and also, by the way, you know, having been a recording artist, whenever you're even planning like a complete album, you know, we're in an era where, you know, somebody releases a single, and if you like the single, you go download it. I mean, there aren't that many people releasing a whole concept album. I mean, I know Taylor Swift does that, and there are a few other artists, but it's like, what's the latest single? Well, when you're planning a whole album, you have to understand it's a complete experience. And it has to have a flow, and it just can't all be the same. And there's got to be moments of like where it's really incredibly intense, and then these moments of beauty. And there's a way to shape that that makes it kind of a journey, a beautiful musical journey. So when you're programming a concert, you have to think of the same thing. You know, where, how do you want it to start? And sometimes you want a concert to start with a bang, but sometimes you don't. Sometimes you just want it to be something that's really just beautiful and quiet that leads into something. And then there's a sort of an arc to a concert, and there's an arc to each half. So we just kind of picked an order of the music that was a little bit chronological, but also from an emotional and exciting standpoint and a beauty standpoint. You have to space that out in a way that keeps the listener interested.
Are there any songs in particular that you're especially excited about in this concert?
Well, I like a lot of songs for different reasons. For instance, Get Back. I just think that when that starts, I mean, it's like, okay, we're going somewhere. You know, I think that's a great song. And Yesterday is so beautiful. And it's just guitar, voice, and strings. And it's a simple sentiment. But the music really, the words are almost, you know, inconsequential in a way, because if somebody just hummed that melody and that music, I think you'd know what it meant even if you didn't see the words. So it's a great song. I think The Walrus is pretty incredible. That's like one of the wildest things I've ever heard. I think Maxwell's Silver Hammer, that's kind of a quirky, fun tune. And that's also what I love about the Beatles, is just everything is so unique and so different. It's really kind of like children. Yeah, there's 20 of my children on this concert. I don't love one of them more than the other, but I love them for different reasons.
Now, believe it or not, or I don't know, I'm speaking almost to myself, believe it or not, there might be people in the audience who may be encountering the Beatles for the first time. What do you hope they'll take away?
You know, it's funny you say that. My grandkids are now 14 and 12. And I remember introducing the Beatles to them when they were 5 and 7. And they went crazy. They just loved it. And they were singing every song back. I mean, there was this childlike amazement at what they were hearing. And I think was hearing this for the first time, it's going to be unexpected. If you've never heard the Beatles before, it's going to be very unexpected. It is a journey. There's so much variety in the songs. Each song is a gem of its own. You're not going to be bored for 1 second. Because just when you think you've heard it all, then something else comes along, which is totally different from everything else. So it's an interesting evening of fantastic music. And of course, I do want to say that we have an amazing cast, guys that have been working with us now for a number of years. And there's such great players. And all of them love the Beatles, which is why they're on the show. They all love the Beatles. So they all are feeling very fortunate to be able to do a project like this. And this is, you know, we don't do this, like there are a few groups out there and they put on the wigs and the costumes and they try to speak with an accent that they don't have. And, you know, and it's a campy thing. And so it's more of a kind of a Broadway show of the Beatles. We don't do that. We really bring the songs to life the way they were intended, but with this, again, symphonic beauty to it. But the singers are really honing in on pretty much singing this in the style of which it originally was. And they pay such honor to the music. So it's really, it's a beautiful experience to be a part of.
Well, we're really excited that you're bringing this to Toronto. And Jeff Tyzek, I want to thank you for taking time to tell us all about it.
Well, it's been my great pleasure.
That was Grammy Award-winning conductor and arranger Jeff Tyzek. He returns to Toronto with his specially created Revolution, the music of the Beatles, a symphonic experience. And that hits the TSO March 4th and 5th. Don't wait. Get your tickets at tso.ca.